Welcome back to From the Ground Up with Mark Weller. I'm Matt Rienzo here with Mark Weller. Mark, how's it going?
Great. It's really great right now. Really busy with all the different work we're doing around the country.
Yeah, we're all over the place.
And in the Bahamas. And it's always fun to go visit these beautiful places and meet these incredible people. So it's been a great few months.
Lots of travel, but really rewarding travel.
That's right. And it's great having three airports here in the Washington, D.C. area between Baltimore, Dulles, and Reagan, because it really changes the ability to get places quickly.
Yeah, no doubt. And we're doing a lot of that. That's for sure. It seems like every week we're going somewhere, but that's a good thing. So, well, let's get on to today's show. We've got a really cool guest today. Mike Ponticelli is the co-founder and VP of sales at BizNow. BizNow's mission is to inform, connect, and advance the commercial real estate community to do more business. They aspire to be the most data-driven and humanizing digital media, live events, and intelligence platform in the galaxy. Wow, that's really, that's high goals. And through this effort, they drive the industry to greater heights. So if you're in real estate or just in business, you probably know BizNow and you probably read something from them almost every single day. So I think this is going to be a really fun and informative episode for our listeners, Mark.
Yeah, I would agree 100%.
I mean, you're an avid reader. You read like a couple hours a day. You read like tons of newspapers and things. And so you've probably been reading BizNow for years.
Yeah, for years. I've participated in various events and been to a lot of events. And I've just seen it grow. And I've seen how great it is for our industry to have a place to sort of get most or a lot of your information. Sometime between 11:30 p.m. and 5:30 a.m., I usually send you all kinds of articles.
Yes, you do. While I'm sleeping, you're reading.
And tell you to take a look. But it's great information, and it's really been helpful, no doubt.
All right. Well, let's invite Mike on.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for being with us. How are you today?
I'm doing terrific, Mark. Hello, Matt. Hello.
How's it going?
It's going great, guys. It's going awesome.
We're psyched to have you here. This is going to be a fun show.
Yeah, no doubt.
I am stoked to be here. I'm riding high right now. I'm in great spirits. I went to see the Foo Fighters open up at the Atlantis last night. From the 9:30 club. Yeah, the
new venue. 400 people there, is that right? Well, there's only 400 people.
400 people. Yeah, 400 people. You know, just so tasteful and well appointed as a rock and roll venue, you know, kind of with the way that, you know, IMP, you know, behind the group behind 9:30 Club, Anthem, Meriwether, Lincoln, you know, they just kind of understand the thing. And so the new venue, it's tiny compared to the 9:30 Club, but it is just awesome. The Foo Fighters opened up last night.
That's an incredible show to open up.
Isn't the room very similar to the original 9:30 room?
It's supposed to be like an exact replica with, like, you know, some certain modifications made to just like improve the experience, I think, but it was very much like an homage to that original space. And then they have this awesome rooftop. It's like right there at 9th and V. It's like right in the like kind of heart of U Street. They have a rooftop that's like the actual stuff that was the street front of like 9th and F in the 80s. Like it's like super gritty. Like very urban. It's awesome.
What year did the original 9:30 Club close?
I can't remember exactly. It was late. It was
in the 90s sometime?
Late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah.
I think, and I'm you know, big shout out to the IMP family, to Seth and Donna, Whitney, my wife. So I should know the stat, but I believe the new 9:30 Club opened up in 1993 with the Red Hot, with the Smashing Pumpkins. I think it was 93.
Okay, and
the Pumpkins.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
So you're a big music guy, Mike?
I am a medium music guy. I'm just a really big supporter of it. And nice. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take that as a segue into talking about my business, actually, if you don't mind. So yeah, here's what I found. I've made this observation. So my wife works with IMP, and I've been fortunate. I go to like a lot of these shows. I get invited to a lot of these great shows. And what I've discovered is that most people think about live music the wrong way. Most people think about live music. They wait for the perfect act. They wait for their favorite band to come to town. And if it is not their favorite band, especially if it's a band they've never heard of, they just don't make the effort to go to live music. And if you wait for your perfect thing and you need it to be just perfect, guess what happens when your expectations are super high and you need the thing to be perfect? Well, life rarely works that way. You know,
I need you and to talk to my daughter and explain that to her. She's trying to get Taylor Swift tickets. So
well, see that would be the perfect example. If it's like, if it must be Taylor Swift in a certain seat or not, you're only going to have one shot a year. And what if it rains or something like that? Your Uber's late or something. But if you go to live music regularly, you will find the effect is it's so much. It's just an awesome thing to go to regularly. It's like going to baseball regularly. Like going to commercial real estate, networking events regularly. Don't just go once or twice a year. If you come to a BizNow event at least once a quarter, it's a great way to stay current, stay alive in your market with what's going on.
That is a great segue, and you are accurate. I actually approach it the same way with other pieces of our business. Keeping traveling going, trying new restaurants, trying new hotels, all that is just staying current with what's going on in the industry overall. So yeah, that's very good advice. Very good advice. So
Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I was just going to say, I want to hear your theory though. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Okay. So I have a theory for why being social matters in commercial real estate. All right. I believe that I'm in a privileged vantage point to opine on this exact and precise topic. And here's my theory on why socialization matters. One is that it is the natural opaque nature of the American system of true ownership is that you have no idea who owns the building across the street from you. You may have an idea if the person chose to disclose that information, but there is plenty of real estate in America. If you go to 123 Main Street, who owns it? 123 Main Street LLC. And people have to go to all these backflipsy kind of things, like reverse out the mailing address or use certain data or technology platform to ascertain who the true owner is. But the American system is set up to give you the option to have your ownership interest be opaque. So you don't necessarily know who owns all the stuff. And then the second part is that the value of that office building across the street, you know what that thing is worth? That's worth however much someone's willing to pay for it. Or alternatively, it's worth whatever the seller's willing to sell for it. It's not fixed like the share of a stock of Amazon. There's like, you know, almost unanimous international consensus how much a barrel of oil costs or various other commodities or things like that. Commercial real estate, opaque ownership. You don't know who owns it. You can sell anything for any price at any time. And insider trading is not only not illegal, it is the coin of the realm. It is the standard operating procedure is to trade on inside information. So for all those reasons, you couldn't pick a more perfect asset class to lend itself to needing to go out there and shake hands and actually be social.
No, you are 100% correct. As somebody that rarely buys deals or projects that are on market, I can tell you that is absolutely 100% true. It's through an event, a BizNow event, that I meet somebody who tells me about something they heard about, and I go investigate it. Or it's out at a club with a friend. Could be out at a music night watching music with friends, and you hear about something, and you follow up the next day. But it's definitely primarily through your social circles and the social network that you keep. So you are 100% correct, and that's a huge part of the value of BizNow. And so, talking about that for a second, so you're the VP of sales, and you're also a co-founder. Talk about your role and how BizNow got started.
Yeah, so it started by a guy named Mark BizNow. You know, he's an individual. He was the Washington Post wrote an article about him once that he'd held every job in Washington because he was a partner at a law firm. He did some political work. He worked in the technology sector. He was very well socialized in like the nonprofit like kind of social scene of where the business elite. Of Washington would convene after dark at, you know, various charitable galas that I'm sure you guys are familiar with. And Mark just became extremely well socialized in this space. And, you know, he had an email newsletter that he was sending out starting around 2005, where he would send out this email newsletter that he wrote up about who he'd had lunch with that day. And Mark kind of was like, had these like, Mark was like a lot of, Mark is a lot of things. I mean, he remains a great friend. We recapitalized the BizNow family out of the business in 2016. We've now brought on a private equity partner out of New York City. But Mark remains a very close friend. He's my business partner and mentor for a bunch of years. And, you know, Mark had this like natural intuition in 2005. And then until 2008, he partnered with a guy named Ryan Beagleman, who was coming over the commercial real estate team at Carlyle Group, and found this BizNow platform. Was like, huh, there's something here. And Mark's idea was an email newsletter business that also had an event piece. Ryan's idea was to point that machine towards commercial real estate. And then he brought me on, among others. And so that's what we did. And so, you know, Mark had certain intuitions that have like kind of been validated by history. One is that just the attention span of the American business executive, somewhere around between 2005 and 2008. Started to plummet like precipitously. Like people like prior to 2005, like, you know, what was an important article? Like if you were reading an article about like the Persian Gulf War, something having to do with the economy, that article was long. Like, you know, it was like the New York Times was like, you know, the story was always continued on page 824. If that article wasn't 10,000 words, it was not considered serious or credible. Even USA Today had not yet started clipping their front page articles. They were the first major media outlet clipping the first page front page articles to be on that front page. Because guess what? People didn't have the attention span. Now, guess what happened? This is like a bunch of dinosaurs playing around, and there's an asteroid coming called social media.
Yeah,
and,
then you comes know, between, in the character limitations.
Yeah, then I mean, it was just like, you know, one day just, it was like what happened like real slowly, then all at once. And so, you know, that the attention spans of folks in America just like gets condensed extremely rapidly. And Mark had a natural intuition around that. And also we had an intuition around the celebritization of business executives. Like, you know, you got to think like right now, it's actually kind of a crazy phenomenon that you would say, if you went back like 20 years, you're like, yeah, listen, here's 20, 23. The most popular man in America, the biggest celebrity, most recognizable name in America is a software engineer who built among rocket ships and electric vehicles. You would be like, that's not a celebrity. Celebrities are athletes or, you know, rock stars or, you know, or people that are, you know, actors or Hollywood types. Those are celebrities. Software engineers are not celebrities. And now, you know, fast forward, you've had a couple of things. America has celebritized now our business executives. And so, you know, people like Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates or, you know, Elon Musk, right? Name a person. These are the like most active names in like pop culture and popular consciousness. And these people are entrepreneurs right now. And yeah, I think Zuckerberg and the Facebook story and a number of other kind of tech stories kind of did that. Podcasting gave you access to all these business executives. So things like the Tim Ferriss podcast and other things that started like mainstreaming the optimizer world.
I've heard people like, talk about from the ground up with Mark Weller too in that same category, but no big deal.
Yeah, I think it's you know, podcasts with a significant impact in this regard. Yeah, definitely Tim Ferriss, Mark Weller, Joe Rogan. You know, I think that's the lineup.
Good man.
But then you know, there's also the TED Talks and other things like just like this like huge appetite for like think about like Business Insider, like seven things a venture capitalist does in the morning and stuff like this. Like, huge appetite for this. So I think that Mark Biznow, you know, in our team, we were like authentically intuitive and early to the notion of short form journalism. And we say we were short form before Twitter, people focused before Facebook, and picture heavy before Instagram. You know, we say that accurately. And then we also just understood that people want to understand, they don't want to understand this company called Amazon. They want to learn about just a guy named Jeff, the founder. You know, there's a natural appetite for the celebritization of business executives. So we did those things and we built a media company around it. And we've now become the largest such media company, we believe in the Western Hemisphere. You know, saying the word galaxies, you know, it seems kind of aspirational and goofy. I think that we are actually kind of whimsical at times, but we are by subscribers. We have 1.5 million readers of our commercial real estate news in the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Ireland. We have over 900,000 subscribers to our news. We did 350 live events and conferences last year. We had 74,000 attendees at those 350 live events and conferences. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And, you know, the majority of our, you know, we don't hold events on Saturdays or Sundays and rarely on Mondays and Fridays. So really Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, like any day of the year, there's probably 2 to 3 BizNow events happening somewhere. There's a group of 200 to 300 commercial real estate professionals gathering, talking about something. And so we do that in 47 cities, and we also own the number one job board in commercial real estate, Select Leaders. We have brought out a data solution, a sales enablement market intelligence tool called BizCred. That is a great resource. Think Zoom Info, if you're familiar with that platform, but Zoom Info for commercial real estate. And I don't want to talk on that team's behalf, and you know, I encourage anybody to talk to them about all the different things that BizCred can do. And we also have an executive retreat series for CEOs of owners and developers and investors of commercial real estate, users of commercial real estate capital with allocators of it. So we built a really big platform around this notion of commercial real estate being a $15 trillion asset class. Commercial real estate includes every square inch of America that's not a national park, state park, Bureau of Land Management, or an actual lake. Like any square inch of America that's not a single family owner occupied home, that's not those things, state or national park, is commercial real estate. like even a military base has military housing, construction for, you know, you have GSA builders, you know, even a military base itself is an ongoing commercial real estate thing. And so it's this enormous asset class that we've built a big platform in. And, you know, we're inspired every day to keep innovating and, you know, get new channels for folks to inform and connect with each other.
First off, wow.
Yeah, I think unbelievable.
What a business you all created. And I think what's fun listening to you talk about this, and I know you really can go deep in real estate. I know we can talk for hours about that. But the reality is what you all are and what you have done is you have been highly successful entrepreneurs. And I don't think people really appreciate, you know, how you all started this, what you all have done to get it to the point it's at and where it really is. And for that, I give you a lot of credit. It's amazing. And you're really bringing,
Mark, thank you.
You're bringing a sense of community. You know, it's the same kind of pride I think a lot of developers get on building community and creating place. You've done that. You've done that in your own way with these events and with your digital platform and so on. And you've really put people together. And to that, it's an incredible skill and entrepreneurial vision that you've executed on. So kudos to you and your partners and your team. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I spoke with Mike last week and Mike, I relayed our conversation, you know, especially what you just said about the land in the US and how much of it is commercial land. I relayed that to my son. I was talking to him on the way out of town for the weekend and was just talking about the opportunity in real estate. And you mentioned something to me about the number of, you know, the wealthiest people in the United States and some percentage of them are in real estate. And about careers in general, can you talk a little bit about that? Cause I want to, if nothing else, I want to have this on recording to make my son listen to it. So, cause you know, he's going to be primed to get a finance degree and get into real estate is what I'm pushing him for. And it's a field that is sometimes overlooked, you know, when people are growing up.
Yeah. It's kind of goes back to this theory, like the every inch of America kind of notion. It's like kind of this commercial, like what is commercial real estate? Like if you actually thought about it, if you like took a step back and assessed commercial real estate, you know, being that vast, this enormous $15 trillion of value, you don't even know the value of commercial real estate in America. It's like an impossible concept. Cause it's like what's the value of the commercial real estate of New Jersey or something like that. It's like, you know, how do you possibly estimate it? It's an enormous asset. It's like almost like hidden in plain sight because it's everywhere around us. It is crazy to me. Crazy. And I grew up in Baltimore City. I went to great Catholic high schools in the Baltimore area. You know, my parents made sacrifices.
What high school did you go to? What high school?
I went to Cardinal Gibbons in Catonsville.
Of course. And the big Baltimore thing, right? Everybody tells you where they went to high school up there.
The archdiocese remodeled some things after I graduated. So my high school, I think, got defunded by the Archdiocese of Baltimore. So I don't think my high school exists anymore. I have a lot of love for Baltimore, high school Baltimore scene. Anyway, listen, the reason I mentioned this is I was in like the cradle of wealth and privilege. Others had certainly more access maybe, but I was raised a great set of opportunities, great educational system, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't until like alarmingly late in life when I realized that like of the paths that one might choose in America, the career options in front of you, my generation, at least this generation seems to get more STEM stuff advanced. For me, it was, you know, I'm in the old end of the millennial arc. It's like you could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer, you could be an astronaut, you could be president of the United States, you could be a firefighter. Like those are like it was
veterinarian.
Like nowhere in the top. Yeah. Nowhere in the top 10 was it like, hey, you could be like a commercial real estate, you know, developer, broker, and so forth. Yet, if you looked at the top 2,000 richest people in America, how many of them, not even are in real estate, how many of them are in multifamily specifically? And it's like 1,200 out of the top 2,000 or something. And then it's like, go to a major state university. Our CEO Greg says this, go to, you know, Michigan or his quarter, any major state university. Look at the people whose names are on the buildings. And not only then commercial real estate, they're actually disproportionately in multifamily. Like you could even just do this exercise and conclude that being a multifamily acquirer and operator of multifamily assets is the surest path to wealth in America. You would objectively conclude that. Yet no one throughout my high school, going to great high schools, you know, great college, no one apprised me of this as an option.
And
no,
we certainly didn't have real estate courses in high school or grade school.
No, and the real estate courses, like they smell like kind of like weird. They're like these like timeshare-y, like, oh, hey, learn about real estate. Like if you ever saw a piece of literature, like, hey, learn about real estate 101, it was probably not what we're talking about here. It was not, you know, learn how to be Larry Silverstein or something like this. It was like some like timeshare-y, like home flippy type thing, which is a great way to make a living. And lots of people do that. But specifically commercial real estate, it's not talked about as a thing that you can do as a career path, as one of the most viable career paths. And it's so interesting. There's so many different skill sets you can do. You can be a deal person, an underwriter person, a capital allocator, a builder, a designer. You could just think all day long about workplace strategies and add, you know, significant value and create a great career for yourself. And I think it's just crazy that we don't talk about this more in America.
Totally. Crazy. Yeah, Mike, I was thinking the same thing, because when I moved from Buffalo, New York, when I was 15 to Maryland, I met my best friend from growing up, and his father was a huge developer in the area, in the region. And had I not met him, I would never even be anywhere near this career. I wouldn't even have thought of it. Nobody had ever told me about it. Nobody had ever really, you know, they gave me my first job working in the field. You know, we worked summers before that. And it all of a sudden became very apparent, oh, this is actually a path I can go down. And I went through construction into development, and here I am now. And so it is fascinating, because if somebody doesn't kind of hit you on the head with it a little bit, or if you're not hyper aware that it's out there, I think it just misses a lot of young folks.
Yeah, I stumbled into it myself. I mean, my assistant coach in lacrosse in high school was Bruce Bashuk, who ran the Mid-Atlantic region for CB Richard Ellis. And he recruited me to go work for them right out of college. I didn't know what real estate was. I had no idea anything. I was like, oh, a job? Sure, I'll take it. Yeah. And that was my first introduction. I worked in office leasing for a year and a half and went into sports after that for a period of time and then came back. But you're right. I mean, and Mike, you're right. I mean, it's just not introduced. It is at the college level if you go to certain places, but generally it's overlooked.
Yeah. I mean, man, I would actually suggest that prior to, you know, I don't know, some period kind of recently, that most commercial real estate networking was done involving lacrosse at some capacity.
Yeah.
I would propose lacrosse as being the primary method by which recruiting was done.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, that's why I got back into real estate, because I knew all these guys that I had played with or I had coached and they were successful in it. And I said, I got to make a switch. So I'm going to do that, you know? And so, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Hey,
Mike,
it is.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, like, you know, as a, you know, topical kind of, you know, shift, or, you know, perhaps just take that run with it a little bit. It's like, okay, well then think about like what else like America needs right now. And, you know, perhaps like, I don't know, I'm not trying to make a political observation, but I think most people subscribe to some general notion that, you know, times are potentially slightly more pessimistic than they were, you know, sometime, you know, pre-COVID or something like that. That like, it's like America, you know, everybody wants to just like build and be prosperous. Like if I had to, you know, say what all of our goals here, it's like shared, you know, equal, equitable, and so forth, but it's like prosperity. It's like, let's build this country. And I think, you know, the moments when our country is best is like when we're building and solving problems together. We have, America's just so great at like entrepreneurial vigor. And I was listening to this interview with Mark Andreessen, you know, the famous venture capitalist. And he was saying that like the last major city built in America was Irvine, California. It was 50 years ago. And that, you know, I think that what Howard Hughes Corporation is doing in the downtown Columbia project, I think is like an ambitious, like kind of new city. I think in our region, there's other sub markets that have that level of ambition. Places, I won't just, you know, I almost don't want to pick favorites, but places like Reston Town Center, certainly Tyson's was the creation of an American city. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, like here we are, we have all these vigorous and vital, you know, people in this country. We have so much optimism and confidence in our ability to solve problems collectively. I think commercial real estate is not only a great place to go into work, I think it's the place that's going to be leading this country. I think that commercial real estate people are going to be leading from the front here as we set the tone for the coming decades.
I love that you're saying this, because I am, I love meeting all these different people and these different avenues in real estate. And you start to realize, there's just so many clever and creative people out there coming up with all these different projects and experiential projects and hospitality and ways to, you know, help people live better or live in a smaller space for less money, but still live in the neighborhoods they want, et cetera, et cetera. It's endless. And I do. There's so many angles and so many places to go that it's a lot of fun to meet all the people doing this.
No doubt. So, hey, Mike, I want to get back to something you said earlier. You know, you were talking about the socialization in real estate and why that's important. I want to take a deeper dive into that quickly. Just the role of events in real estate. But specifically, like, how's it been COVID, post-COVID? I know we're now out of COVID as far as I'm concerned, but there's still lingering effects on events. How has that been? And just talk about the role of events in general in real estate a little more.
I think it's like real estate is kind of unique because there's like such a robust lattice work of events over everybody. You have the events that are relevant to your industry niche. Like, for instance, if you're a broker, you probably belong to an association of brokers. If you're an architect, you go to AIA. If you're a lawyer, you go to the American Bar Association and so forth. And then you want to also go, I mean, what we propose is that there's actually an intersectional group that's not actually thoroughly grasped by any particular trade association. That's like the intersectional, the Venn overlap of commercial real estate, which is where developers overlap with brokers, overlap with builders, overlap with investors. But there's this like connective place, intersectional place in the middle of all those things. So the answer is that you have a lot of options for, and like this industry has happened to be a place that has always been very event heavy for reasons that I've kind of laid out. So it's like, you know, COVID absolutely disintermediate that. And I mean, listen, a lot of these events were the ones that were affected most heavily were trade associations who do annual conventions that tend to be in one place once or twice a year, you know, a few times a year. They tend to, you know, have a multi-day impact and you have to spend thousands of dollars on a floor pass and you have a big trade show at Expo Hall. Those conventions were real challenging to scale back in COVID after COVID. But what we saw was it was a real uneven map that there were some places that got back and got more comfortable with convening and lifted restrictions more quickly than others. Those jurisdictions probably won't be surprising to you, but like Texas and Florida, for instance, were convening faster than, you know, mm-hmm. Northern California, for instance. And so, you know, some of that geographic, there was a geographic overlay for how folks got back. Then there was just this robust, just amazing time last year when everyone was just coming back and events were so welcome and the industry was just so thrilled to get back together. And I think we're still kind of in that honeymoon period. Now, I think, and I'm kind of speaking on behalf of both my company and then, you know, the state of events, you know, globally or broadly with, you know, so contemplating all of it. Like, I think now, I mean, you know, events play a special role in this industry when times get a little bit hard. And if we are in a recessionary environment or an environment where there is, you know, uncertainty in some mainstay asset classes, like, for instance, potentially office or some other, maybe some geographies or some submarkets within major geographies have question marks for the first time, perhaps in a while. I think that in those circumstances and conditions, I think events actually are not a nice to have, but a must have. And, you know, I would propose our thing and, you know, in collaboration with the other conference and event companies in our industry that, like, you know, right now is the time to help support our constituency and support this industry, helping get people together, sharing best practices, sharing notes about what they're seeing out there, and hopefully, you know, enabling people to get deals done, you know, and set us up for success when, you know, conditions turn back in our favor.
Yeah. You know, we've been recently active again, going to events and, you know, we went to the Alice conference out in California for hospitality, and the NYU conference is coming up. We'll be going to that. And then, you know, we went to your hospitality event that you had in Washington, D.C. somewhat recently. I have to tell a little bit of a funny story. I mean, Mike is obviously, he's an awesome guest and this is a great conversation. We'll talk for a while longer. So we got plenty of time left. But when I first met him, it was loud in the reception area at the BizNow event a couple months ago. And he comes up to me and starts talking to me and I didn't catch his name because it was too loud. And so then he's talking to me and I'm like, yeah, well, I'm supposed to have the co-founder of BizNow on the podcast at some point. And he's like, yeah, that's me. That's me. So that was really funny. And, you know, I say that because you're fairly young and to accomplish everything you've done, I think is really cool and inspiring and you've done a great job. So little self-deprecation there for me, but, so what I wanted to talk to you a little bit is your background. So you went to GW, you grew up in Baltimore, went to GW. And, what were you into in GW? Was there anything that you studied or did clubs that led you to be on this path? I mean, it's such a unique, career that you're in and you've been doing it a long time. How did you get like interested in it?
So I studied international, but first, I appreciate your interest. No, I'm a platformer, as in like I create events and contents for other people to tell their stories. Rarely am I platformed. Hey, you know,
welcome. I don't know how interesting. Welcome to the platform.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the platform. Yeah. Wow. So the brights are real light. The lights are bright up here. So I went to GW. I studied international affairs. My family was political. I always thought I was going to do political stuff. I find political stuff like interesting and very important. And I would happily just argue politics with you, you know, for the rest of the day. That would bring me, you know, nothing would bring me more joy. You know, and so I went and worked at a think tank. And then I thought, you know, that was, you know, maybe that was that, but you know, those things are kind of sleepy. And then there was, I graduated in 06, this great financial crisis immediately hit. And so there's just no jobs. Like times were not frothy. I was, I had an entrepreneurial thing that didn't work out. I was bartending at the old Epic Grill, doing some night shifts in Adams Morgan.
That's a great place.
It was an unbelievable experience. And honestly, big shout out to the Clyde's Group. I cannot say enough good things about an iconic, you know, regional institution. And, you know, like if I go full arc and, you know, achieve, you know, whatever my definition of success is, there's a non-zero chance I end up behind the bar at the old Epic Grill, chucking oysters and pouring beers and just, you know, having conversations with people. Cause that's just a great way to do things. But anyway, it wasn't, I linked up with Mark Biznow's son, Elliot Biznow, via, you know, two friends of mine from college, Brett Levy and Jeff Rosenthal. And, these guys, you know, Elliot just had this, you know, extremely entrepreneurial, you know, kind of energy about him. And so did his father, Mark Biznow. Elliot went on to start the Summit Series. He's now, you know, they acquired, among other things, a mountain in Utah and have a, you know, phenomenally interesting story with lots of interesting things. We've been to
Summit events and we spent time with the people you just mentioned and we've had a lot of fun with it.
We went out to Powder Mountain and we've seen all that.
I'll say this, like it was just being around, you know, it's like 2008, 2009, 2010. There was like this like burgeoning sense of like entrepreneurship, like I kind of in America and my generation, the millennial generation was kind of coming out of a great financial crisis. And there's like a lot of things were possible. There was like a real sense of possibility then. I mean, I certainly felt, you know, just boundless and irrational, you know, opportunity and everything. And there was certain like kind of, there's like a subculture of entrepreneurship that I, of like, you know, like people that read like the Tim Ferriss 4-Hour Work Week and some other stuff. There's this like sense that there could be another way of doing things. And I'm speaking, that's like kind of lofty, aspirational sounding language, but I mean it. It was like kind of pervasive, really. I certainly felt that it's everywhere. And so doing this media company thing, it was like, you know, selling advertising or doing conferences for commercial real estate. Now that was like secondary to like, let's just build something interesting and fascinating so we don't have to grow up. So I don't have to get off the pirate ship. And then, you know, the business started, you know, having some serious stickiness in some places and we started doubling, tripling down. You know, now I would say we're much less frivolous. We refer to ourselves less as a pirate ship now than we used to. But like, I just, you know, we just had a real entrepreneurial bent and I don't think I ever would have scratched that in foreign affairs or working for the government.
Very cool. You
know, I just like entrepreneurial stuff.
So you have following, you know, and the question is like, what does the customer want from Biznow and what does Biznow really want from its customers? And how do you think about that?
So we sell a number of different products. Basically we're an enormous platform and the notion here is build the world's number one commercial real estate platform, certainly in the United States, and then supply them with products and services to help inform and connect and advance the industry. And so it's free to subscribe to our news. We require you to go through a data gate and we know quite a bit about our almost 900,000 subscribers. We know who's in multifamily, who's interested in industrial, how many of those folks are architects, how many of those folks are architects in Phoenix. You know, we can get, you know, quite precise on that kind of thing. That gives us a really unique insight into where the industry is going. And we have this like really diverse portfolio model of our events and news. You know, we're in 47 geos, 47 geographic markets. Yeah, so at any given time, you know, if San Francisco is maybe going one direction, you know, perhaps Nashville is going in another direction, just in terms of market activity, then we're in every single asset class, you know, not just multifamily, industrial, retail, and hospitality, but I mean, we have, you know, events, conferences on everything from data centers to industrial outdoor storage, to, you know, all kinds of, you know, things related to life sciences and medical offices. I mean, there's so many different asset classes in the industry. So very diverse there. And then think of a major development. Think of like, you know, some of the projects you guys been a part of. And, you know, for instance, Baltimore, for instance, like a Baltimore Peninsula type project or the Wharf type project, Washington, D.C. or Hudson Yards in New York City. Think of how many businesses eat off of that deal. Yeah. Think of how many businesses made money off of a project the size of the Wharf or Hudson Yards. You have just oodles of lawyers and CPA groups and environmental survey people and brokers and architects and people that sell urinal cakes, people that sell doors, people that sell glass curtain walls. I mean, it's just then the financial products and the consultants layered onto it. It's
construction
just
and marketing and on and on and on.
On and on. There's probably 150 service lines of some buyer selling something to some seller, right? And so if BizNow can gather the people that are making development decisions, or you go a click down and people that are being the project managers and leading the construction, or the people that are leading the design, the architectural and brokerage team, property marketing, property management teams, or then you go down to like the asset level and you're talking about how individual floors are being designed. Is there a wellness, you know, notion here? Is this a TOD type pointing thing? Are there specific uses? Are we gearing this one towards a GSA tenant perhaps? And it's just so many layers of buyers and sellers that we can constantly, using our very nimble model, just position an event, conference, or digital thing, a digital publication, or some other kind of, you know, tactic to engage buyers and sellers within anything within this big, huge industry of commercial real estate. So I think that that's really like our nimbleness, just understanding the buyer-seller dynamics. Now, what does that mean for like tactics? How does that feel? You can buy a ticket to our events. And, you know, last year we had 74,000 attendees to our events. That's one product that we sell. You can sponsor our local events. You can attend, sponsor, or partner our executive retreat series, including the number one leading series of local market cocktails for GPs to meet LPs in America. And you can post a job on our job board. You can use our data as a service company, BizCred, or you can engage in our marketing services platform where we can tell stories about your brand, includes things like advertising and content strategies to market your platform, your service, or your development.
Yeah, that's a full spectrum of services that you all are into and providing. Let me ask you a real simple, funny question though. Do you ever invest in deals? Do you ever put money in real estate deals? People must come to you with the best ideas. You must see some really neat stuff at all the events you all do. What have you gone into and what have you had fun with?
You know, I appreciate you asking that. So the answer is there's like always this like next level, which is like, can a media company evolve into being a principal actor in the industry it services? This is a fascinating question. And I one that like kind of dips up onto some like real big, like, you know, role of media in America type questions. It's actually a really interesting one to tease. We've long thought that we're kind of in a privileged position to launch some kind of fund or something. And sadly, I don't have some piece of news about that. I personally invest in real estate deals. I took a fund that's towards affordable and workforce housing about 4 years ago. And I linked up with a GP that we've done a number of deals with and has a nice platform going. And, you know, I would be very keen to figure out if any of your listeners had some idea for how we could, you know, better socialize deals to get capitalized. I mean, like, that's like really where the rubber meets the road, like end of day, is like finding and trading off-market deals. Like, you're a developer. You don't want to look at something that I'm not going to mention any other platforms that you might use in this industry to socialize a deal. But say you saw a deal that many thousands of people, or you suspected many thousands of people had seen. It's just like really hard to get over the hurdle of like saying like, oh, this deal is picked through. I'm not, you know, but you know, would you belong to some like private invite only group perhaps of people that were trading deals? Like perhaps you would consider that, you know? And then, you know, perhaps there is like some way of using a network to connect equity with deals. You know, that is essentially really interesting. And there's any number of great innovative groups out there that are trying to create technologies to connect investors with deals, real estate deals. I think so, a lot of that stuff is really interesting too. But I personally, yes, I do. And I do invest in deals. What I actually realized is kind of end on a funny note here is that like we became like hyper socialized in the developer community. And I think what we realized is that we just basically knew all of the competitors. So it wasn't like we could just introduce 10 developers to 10 other developers and have, you know, just BizNow just enjoy all the fruits of that introduction. There is a layer of value there, but it's really, I think, you know, be interesting to see if we can, I think we're in a good position to pioneer this if we could evolve to the principal side as a platform, but we've not yet done that.
Yeah, and you're essentially doing that. I mean, you're in the middle of so much right now, and it's just how to capitalize that, and then how to add more value from there. And I think you could. So let me ask you
a question. Okay, so you're a developer. Where would you? And you don't pay for deals, to my knowledge. You didn't say, "Hey, I'd like to pay $10,000 for that envelope with a big question mark over there. And the seller of this is like, this is an off market deal and you're going to love it. You don't, there's no market for paying for the actual deal itself. There's brokers for sure that have a, there's a whole industry called broker that do, that, that will broker the things. But what would you pay for? Would you pay $100 a month to a community, maybe a Slack channel or a text message group of other developers? Would you pay $1,000 a month? You know, would you, or would you say that the, should the seller absorb it or should the buyer? You know, where might you be keen to deploy small amounts of capital, even $50 a month? And, you know, if we got 1,000 folks like you or 500 of you together, that would be enough for us to put a team behind it. You know, where would you start to add value?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think the way to approach it is all the, you have to figure out where you can add the most amount of value to sort of, I would say, cut the hair off the deal and start to present things properly so that there's a lot of the sort of static and noise is out of it. And it's understandable by the community that's either investing in it or looking to purchase it. And people would pay for that. People would pay top dollar for something that's already been sort of looked at a little differently. But the differentiator is when you start pushing product, then you become sort of a salesman versus somebody that has an inside scoop. So you'd have to keep it to something that would allow for you to be the inside scoop and you to be something special and you represent something different than what, say, just a standard brokerage community represents. Why a seller would do that or why somebody raising money do that, you'd have to ask that question as well. Maybe it's more discreet, maybe it's more maybe it's just it's more streamlined. But yeah, I mean there's a million avenues on how to do this business. I've always said it, and I've said it a lot, this is not a it's not a science, this business is an art, and there's so many people doing it so many different ways, and there are some, you know, incredibly systematic ways to do certain parts of the business, but there's a lot of other ways that people do this business that are unlike other companies and are totally dissimilar. So I think you're onto something there. I think you just got to refine it.
Well, here, I'll give you,
and you're a great entrepreneur, so I'll bet you could figure it out.
Well, let's bounce ideas off each other, but let me suggest this as a way of thinking. So maybe on one end of the spectrum, you have the antique store. You have an antique store, like literally sells like dusty old antiques. You're like, oh man, that's like every person imaginable has been in this store. And then on the other side, you have like an auction house. I don't know much about auctions, but it seems like Christie's or Sotheby's. Like if you're going to auction off like a Leonardo da Vinci or a Banksy or something, use Christie's. I just hear this name Christie's. Maybe over here is Christie's. So it's like, where in the spectrum of like antique store or like pawn shop, that anything at all could be put up there? Yeah. To Christie's, who's like, they're going to sell one thing, one single item per year. And it's, you got to be invited to even be, to have an opportunity to bid, you know, somewhere. And that's like a big funnel. Like one is the one side of that is a huge funnel, big top of the funnel.
Yes.
That one's very narrow. Where in that spectrum might we find a sweet spot? I would love to explore that with you one day.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I kind of think I have an idea, but we could talk about that another time.
There we go. Chop it, come up with ideas. I love it.
This is amazing. We're just coming up with business ideas. It's great.
Well, now that you have a media company, you have to welcome to my world. Now you have this podcast, so you are in the media business. So now you need to, you think, how do I turn this media business into a principal actor? Welcome to my world. I've been thinking about this for a while.
Yeah, I bet.
First step is selling advertising. And I'd like to announce that BizNow is going to sponsor our podcast going forward. Just kidding. But maybe someday.
There is a world of podcast advertising. There's a whole world out there of that.
No doubt. Well, you know, with great guests like you and others we've had, I think we could get there. So, hey, Mike, this has been awesome. I mean, before we let you go, I don't want to take up your whole morning, but is there anything else you want to talk about before we let you go?
I really appreciate that opportunity. I would just encourage everybody to come to our events. And my email address is mike@biznow, MikeBisnow. If you have any ideas, inclinations, notions, if your business is trying to do something, shoot me a note. We love talking to commercial real estate.
And obviously so many people know this, so it's not some secret, but your events are not only really productive and really interesting, but I always have a lot of fun. So when you can mix the two together, that's what I found. That's where a lot of the magic happens. So congratulations on all your success. This was a very interesting conversation, and I thank you so much for making time to speak with us today.
Mark, Matt, thank you very much. I'm a huge fan of your shop as well, and I look forward to our future collaborations. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. A big thank you to Mike Ponticelli from BizNow for joining us today. We look forward to hosting many other industry leaders on future podcasts. So we'd love to hear from you, the audience, about what you want us to feature. Hit us up on social media at Weller Development on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Rienzo. He's Mark Weller. Keep building, people.